Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Well, we're ready for a good show today. We've got a gentleman on that epitomizes doing the job yourself. We had a show about due diligence the other morning, and it was about people taking responsibility to learn how to handle their own cases and how to work in court on their own. And I'll tell you, that's not an easy thing for people. It's not an easy thing at all. And many people, many times, go into court and or into contracts and shoot themselves in the foot because they don't know what they're doing. And many people have studied. Many people have taken to task trying to, and I say trying because try also implies failure, trying to teach others how to do it themselves. But I got to tell you what, this man we're going to have on this morning, I'll tell you, Carol, don't, good morning, Carol. Don't you agree True Freeman is one of the best at the pro se and doing it himself that we've found? I think he's one of the best out there.
Yeah, he's very good. I reached out to him. I'd been following him before I ever even got on Facebook with my maiden name. So I was following him, and he was instrumental in helping me and my grandchildren and my daughter. I reached out to him, and he met me and took the papers that I had found in the court case, the secret court case, and that's on. I came on True's show one night, and he had a talk show because he said, you got to get this out here because he's an advocate here in Indiana. That's what I call him. I don't know what he would call himself, but I call him an advocate. So I was following him on YouTube to try to find out because I was trying to help my daughter, and we didn't want to hire an attorney because we know that attorneys, we just didn't want to because it seems like they slow things down and kind of direct the outcome of everything. So I got in touch with him, and on his dime, he came over, got the papers, took them up to Tim Horty, the Corruption Task Force in Indianapolis, and from there, it looks like there's been a domino effect, at least here in Indiana. And I
got to agree. I watched that. He took a video or an audio in with him as well, and so we got to watch as he went into that office, and wow, what respect we have. So any updates on anything going on that we need to talk about real quick before we bring True in? I think I'd rather just go straight into True. What do you think?
No, I'd rather let him talk, and you guys go ahead, and I'll be here to listen, and if you need me, just call me. I'll be here.
Well, stay right there, Carol. Well, good morning.
Hey.
True, is that you?
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Oh, well, hello and good morning, sir, and thank you so much. Carol calls has a name for you. I call you a pioneer because I believe that we are in a new world as far as not a new world order, don't get me wrong there, but a new world as far as the sheeple waking up and learning that what we've been taught is not real. And you are a pioneer because they don't teach this in law school. They don't teach this in the history books. They don't teach this in social studies. We are the people bringing this new information, which really isn't new. It's all old. It's just interpretation. But you, my dear man, I do consider a pioneer, and thank you today. We are going to let you talk about what you feel is important for us to know. And again, thank you for your time. So come on, True, give us a little bit of a history about yourself for about a minute. I know that's a short time, but then let's get into what we need to hear from you.
Okay, you got to excuse me because I didn't get to bed until like 6:30 this morning and got.
Oh,
right,
my Lord.
Yeah, it's a rough journey. Background about me is, you know, I just started digging into looking into some things because I was told a few things about certain situations and I didn't believe it. So I started looking into it, trying to disprove what certain individuals were saying, and I couldn't disprove it. And in fact, it proved to be true, and I basically went on a journey to check out everything that I could think about to see what was the real story. So I dug off into researching law, and, you know, understanding the Constitution, because I used to talk about my right this, my right that. And when I read the Constitution, it was like I really felt like I was so ignorant because I didn't know anything, you know. So,
well, you knew there was something, and that's what I think true is what you've brought to everyone is don't give up. There is something you can do. You just have to do it the right way. You know, not. I feel like a monkey with a loaded gun shooting myself in the foot when I walk into the courtroom, and I'm trying really hard to learn. But, boy, you have, with watching your videos and seeing how you proceed in court, you have become one of those men that Carol and I both watch, respect, and I do say people should mimic.
Yeah, you know what's the biggest thing that I'm doing that I believe is basically giving them a problem?
What's that?
Since I'm hitting them in the pocket.
Yes, you are.
A lot of people are chasing money. I'm not chasing them, or Federal Reserve notes, whatever you want to call them. And I feel a lot of people, by doing that, they're clouding their mind and they can't really focus on the true agenda at hand or the true task that they should be focused on, which is trying to basically expose this form of government corruption. And I'm like this. You write me a $50 ticket, I'm going to make sure you spend anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000 trying to get a $50 citation.
Sooner
or later, you're going to realize
sense.
I'm not a profitable slave for you. You see what I mean? So,
exactly. You're not playing their game. You're using their game against them.
It's hard to do. It's hard to go in there and overcome what's happening to us. But when you know the truth and you know what you're doing is right, stumbling, I mean, you have to. It's just like riding a bike. You're learning how to ride a bike. You fall. You scrape your knees. You scrape your elbows. I mean, do you give up and never learn how to ride a bike? Or do you keep trying, because the more you practice, the better you'll get? You know, you could never be perfect, but, I mean, practice will get you as close to perfection as possible. If you don't practice, you're not going to, you know, basically go anywhere. And a lot of people.
Well, and you know, True, with you saying that, that's really key, because fear is what stops all of us. Fear is what keeps us from reaching out. And anything we do, no matter what it is, if it's cooking a new recipe, if it's, you know, going to a new restaurant, if it's going, taking our car to a new car dealer, you know, to a new mechanic, there's fear of being harmed. And so many times people just don't do it because of the fear. And watching you, and I hope the listeners will start looking at your videos and listening to how you proceed, because now I'm the same way. I can now walk into a courtroom and I don't break out into a cold sweat anymore. You know, I used to think, oh, my God, like walking into a hospital. Some people can't even go into a hospital because they, even if it's just to visit a friend, because of their experience there. So the dentist, same thing. The fear is what directs us, and we have got to learn to direct our fear to educating ourselves, as you have done. So what would you say is probably the number one thing today that you want to start sharing with us?
You know, for those who are new to this, or even if you've been in this for a while and you still have this fear, it's like if you don't get rid of the fear and you don't get rid of the trash that's cluttered in your brain, you're not going to understand what a lot of us are out here are trying to share with you, and you're not going to be able to operate properly within the court system or the judicial system, or what I like to call, which is what it is a private law firm.
Right.
If you don't get rid of this fear and the clutter that's in your blunt brain, which is the lies we have been programmed to believe, then you're going to continue to have these problems. And people say money is the root to all evil. I would beg to differ, and I would say fear is the root to all evil, because if we are fearful of them, it gives them, basically, they're riding almost on an empty tank right now, or a quarter of a tank. And for those who go in and they are scared of them, or they allow them to walk over them and intimidate them and threaten them, what you're doing in turn is you're basically, they're getting ready to run out of gas, They don't have any more money, let's just say, and we're going to go to court with a, to give them a full tank of gas. It's like basically we're gassing them up by the fear, and they can tell when you go into court. A judge can tell, judge, magistrate, pro tem, commissioner, whatever they may be, they're all attorneys. They know if you're scared. They know if you're fearful. And one thing people need to do is people that are going to court and trying to stand up for themselves and challenge these judges and prosecutors and so on and so forth, people need to go with them in support. Not only in support, they need to go so that they can learn. They need to go so that when certain things are said, they can see the reactions of a judge and a prosecutor. That's what made me videotape my hearings, because I liked it to see their actions, their facial expressions, their face turning red when I use certain Supreme Court cases or state law that they believe that I didn't know or know about. And
you know, that's key, True, because I know when I started in the foreclosure movement many years ago, just going to court and offering support, literally just going to sit there, is when my fear began to dissipate. Because the more aware of your surroundings you are, the less fearful you are of them. So if nothing else, if people will just start picking up their bodies out of their homes and go down to the local courts and just start supporting some of these people who are in there for different reasons. If you want to go to a traffic court, go to a traffic court and sit there. If you want to go to a superior court and follow some of these foreclosure cases, the more you become familiar with the surrounding, the less fearful you are. I know I had a small claims case that I filed, which was probably the one that finally gave me that aha moment of understanding, and not understanding, because I don't think I can truly understand, but of the knowledge that I didn't have to fear so much, because listening to you and hearing the questions to the court, under what jurisdiction and under what remedy am I standing here, those two key components helped me become less fearful. It's still a journey, and I'm still following pioneers like yourself, and I consider myself a pioneer, as I consider Carol. What was your first aha moment in the courtroom when you felt, okay, here it is, I get it, we the people are the government, this courtroom is nothing but a business, and all they're here for is to take our money, and now I can turn the key to my engine taking control. When was your aha moment?
Well, kind of my aha moment was kind of right before I went to court, because it was in regards to when they took my dog and they wrote me these citations. And I'm like, okay, a ticket, okay, it's a fine, and, you know, whatever. But when I turned the ticket over, it said, you are being sued by the city of Indianapolis. I was like, what the hell have I done to the city of Indianapolis? How am I being sued? I thought I was given a citation. And I'm like, this really is just about money. And soon as I wouldn't comply with basically surrendering or abandoning my property, you know, they went back and created a fictitious warrant. And when I read the warrant, it was just amazing what I found in it. It was like the judge who signed that warrant would had to have a third grade. He couldn't have completed no more than a sixth grade in school.
Interesting.
Because that warrant, I was just thinking, my son could write a better warrant than that. And I started looking at everybody else's warrants and paperwork from the court and probable cause affidavits, and it was like, none of this is right, you know, because I studied the codes and laws in regards to probable cause and some other things, and it was like when I saw what they were doing, I felt that it was basically because of me coming out and exposing them. I didn't get into this because I had a problem. I haven't been pulled over. I haven't received a traffic ticket in probably, 12, 13 years now? Not even pulled over. I didn't have any problems. I wasn't going through a mortgage problem. I wasn't, you know, had pretty much quite a bit of Federal Reserve notes, you know, and it wasn't that I got into this to get out of something. It was I got into this to understand the truth. So then when they brought me in the court system, and then I'm bringing up the fact that it's warrant. Now, the main aha moment came in the court when it was like, my first hearing, I present all this evidence. The warrant is invalid. A warrant was issued because I said that my rights are being violated. I'm going to sue. That is exactly what it said in the so-called probable cause affidavit. Was the reason that they turned it over for a warrant. So since I said that my rights are being violated and I'm suing the city, you felt to go back, tell the judge to issue a warrant to come take my property because I said I was going to sue you. And that's exactly verbatim what they said in the warrant. Then I'm looking at the warrant, and the warrant was signed on the 20th of December in 2011, but it got a file stamp date on it from the court December 16, 2011. I'm like, how does a judge sign a warrant 4 days before it's how does a warrant get entered into the court 4 days before it's signed by the judge? Or before
and
it's
see,
issued by the judge?
You know what, True? That's exactly the same thing that Carol and I have seen multiple times. Many of us across the nation have seen multiple times. And what's key here is for people listening is when you say property, for our listeners, remember, property is your children, your home, your car, your shoes, your dog, anything, correct? And so what you're talking about right now in property, anyone listening that has to walk into a courtroom can hear what you're saying right now and validate that if they just read the fine print and understand, or again, understand is a hard term because I don't think any of us without truly going through schooling for attorneys or law school can understand the procedures because it's really taught to play a game rather than support justice. So this whole thing you're talking about here can translate to any property we have.
Exactly, and that's a problem that people are having with their children or what they call their children.
Offspring. We've been taught to now say offspring. Carol and I have had a couple of people on the show, and they say as soon as you call them children is when you will have problems with CPS and family courts, et cetera, that you need
right.
to call your offspring offspring. So that was a key thing
right.
we
and
learned
see,
in the last couple of weeks.
I keep it simple. That's my property. You call it your kids' property? Well, no, I don't have any kids. I have property. That is my property, period. Can you dispute that that's my property?
Gotcha.
You see what I mean? It's really, to me, it's really so simple. It's simple but complicated, which appears to be a catch-22. But you have a lot of people out here, you know, cancel the Social Security number, do this. It's like, okay, you giving up. You would be giving up anything, any interest that you have in that entity that they created for you. You see, so I'm not giving up anything. What I'm doing is taking control over it. I'm taking control over myself, and I'm taking control over my legal entity, which was given to me to do business and commerce, and they have no right to use it, abuse it. They done stole the identity. That's why the information Carol brought was so powerful and key, and it ties in with all of this that's going on because I believe it does basically go back to a form of identity theft. And that's another thing
yes.
we're not doing. We're not filing identity theft claims against them.
And, you know, back up just a little bit here, True, because when you talk about what you just said, there's those out there who are just beginning to hear about Social Security and the birth certificate and how it is the commerce that is used against our corporate identity. So when you say you are not giving it up, are you claiming it? And how, if so, how are you claiming it? And how do you become now in control of your commerce?
How did I claim it? I looked at all the different ways people were claiming or assuming that they were claiming it. I listened to the people and looked at what they had in regards to giving it up. I'm like, okay, if you give it, if anybody ever, if you guys have not saw that video that I put out last year, and I just put a video out a few days ago because it was up, they gave an update on the story. There was this man in some part of Ohio, and he had left, you know, left Ohio, went to some different states. You know, I think he was an alcoholic and on drugs or whatever. He wanted to get his life together. And he just left. Didn't tell nobody where he was going or anything like that. So I think he was gone for 8 years, 8 or 9 years. And we know that you are presumed to be legally dead after 7 years. If nobody's heard from you within 7 years. See, a lot of people were saying this, but they had no proof to back it up, really.
Right.
So this judge in Ohio, this guy comes back after about, I think it was about eight, a little over 8 years. And he was receiving certain benefits and things like that. So he comes back to basically, you know, let people know that he was alive, and come to figure out, he realized that they considered him dead and his family were getting Social Security and stuff. So he petitioned the court basically to bring him back to life, really, is what it boiled down to, because he was legally considered dead. The judge literally told him in court that basically, even though I see you standing before me and I know you're alive and here in the flesh, he said, I can't basically overturn that case, overturn the death, because I forgot how much time it took. I was looking at it the other day. Once they issue a death certificate, they can't, after a certain period of time, they cannot go back and correct it.
Okay, so basically, though, that's the corporate entity that they can no longer bring back, because they have now basically dispersed it into another,
right.
I call it another realm, is what has happened, correct?
Yeah, and that's the key. It depends. See, everybody's situation is different. People have to look at their life, their situation, and see what is the best thing for them. Some people may want to give it up. One thing about getting rid of it, and this man got rid of it by accident. If he know what we know, he'd probably be fine with it if he wanted to be private, but I'm assuming he needs some benefits and privileges from the government. But what people, the main thing people don't understand about him being considered legally dead is the fact that this man could never, ever be charged with a crime. This man never, ever be brought into the court. This is 100% proof. It's the basically there's a name tied to it, but it's not really the name. It's tied to the Social Security number, but the Social Security number is first and foremost. You have many people out here with the same exact name, but they have different Social Security numbers. It's
different
number.
Identifiers. Yeah, different identifiers, which is what gives them their corporate identity.
Can I say
identity.
Something?
Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
The Social Security numbers that I found, and I'm just putting out there what I found, in the master death file search, I got into a link, and it shows that they actually marry the Social Security numbers. So the names now become numbers, and they marry those numbers, parse them out. So that's how we get, like, my grandson Cameron Stickle, which is Cameron Rubel, but Cameron Stickle now is 24 years old with 47 felonies. So that's a Social Security number that the last five were valid. The ones before that, I don't know how they parsed them out, but I know the last five of those matched with this young man's or child's, any child, and that's how they're creating those in the background, because the IRS does not require the proper name or the birth date. They check to make sure those last five of that social are right. And that's all. I didn't mean to interrupt, guys. Go ahead.
No, Carol, that's valuable. Valuable information, because as we know too, the Social Security number is not supposed to be an identifier that has to be used for identification. They're not supposed to be able to ask for your Social Security number in order to ID you. I know when I was told this, and last year I had to go into the bank and I was cashing a check and for my son actually. And when we went in, they asked for Social Security card. And I looked at the girl, and I said, okay, I've got to ask you a question. She says, well, you have to have your Social Security card. And I said, I have to. She said, yes. So, of course, went home, got my Social Security card, came back. And my question to her was, I said, do you realize it's illegal to ask for my Social Security number in order to use it for identification? And she looked at me, and because she told me that's what she was using it for. And she said, I didn't know that. And I said, well, honey, you better learn this because all of you here are committing felonies. Does your boss know that you're committing a felony? And the boss then comes over and, you know, of course, we're not trying to cause trouble. We're just trying to get answers. And when the woman came over, I said, I was told that I had to give my Social Security number for identification. And she nodded and I said, that's a felony for you to request that. And she looked at me. And all of a sudden, everybody stops. She goes back, and she comes back. She goes, well, we don't need it for identification. We just need it to match with the accounts, et cetera. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to let you off on this time. But just know if it was somebody else who's very serious, like a pioneer, like some of us are, I said, when the person comes in who's very serious about taking you to task for this request, you will find that it's going to start happening because people are waking up. You better have a meeting and to discuss how no one should have to present a Social Security card in order to open a bank account.
Right. You know what's funny about that is because it's like everything that they're doing is right in our face, and since you mentioned the Social Security card and things like that, I'm going to give people an example. If you look at the Social Security card and the birth certificate, it tells you that you cannot use those as a form of identification. But yet, when you go to the DMV or the BMV, those are the two main pieces of identification that they require you to have.
And now, why is it you believe that is?
Because they have to tie you to claiming yourself as the public entity, which in turn, you literally become legally dead, but you become a legally dead person that they can charge versus the actual legally dead individual that I was talking about in Ohio, because now they are suing the IRS. Is now, it came out the other day, I done a video on it, the IRS is now going after the mother and the children to recoup the benefits because he's not dead, but he is considered legally dead on paper, period. They cannot recoup those funds. But that's what they're trying to do, and they're going after the mother and the children because they cannot go after a legally dead man, even though they know he's not dead. They do not have the corporate name or the identifier to that name. They do not have them as basically a valid entity. Okay, basically that entity is no longer registered to do business in that state. That's the best I can say, or in the country. So they cannot charge that man. That man, and what's crazy about this is that man can go out there and murder somebody tomorrow and he cannot be charged. I don't think people understand it.
And that's key, because this is what's key about, and again, I do believe, because of the pioneers, that people all across the nation. Carol and I talk to many, many people, and we participate in many phone calls, and it seems, now Carol, say if you agree with this, what I'm finding is when I'm on these calls and talking to people, the majority of the conversation is circling around this very conversation we're having here now in the birth certificate, identifiers, and commerce. These conversations that used to be about what do we do with these corrupt courts is now becoming, we know the courts are corrupt, we know they're nothing but businesses, we know they're corporations, the only government is we the people who are actually in charge of the public servants. So now what we're seeing is the shift of, instead of bitching about, excuse the expression, bitching about the judiciary being so corrupt, now people are discussing how we can stay out of the judiciary, which in effect, if we stay out of the justice system, it shuts them down because they're not making any money. And then
we
have the...
Yeah,
I think it's time we shut them down. Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Well, how we do it. He's going to tell you.
I want to hear
it. We stop funding. They write you a 50. I tried to help out quite a few people here locally, And it came to where they were getting and some people abroad, and they were trying to, like, say for a couple traffic cases I was helping people handle, and traffic tickets, and they were trying to fine them a couple $300 or something. And the person, you know, was trying to fight, you know, and they knew they were going to, well, it appeared that they were going to keep fighting. So what did the government, what did the courts do? They came back and dropped the fine to $50, charges dismissed if you accept, if you pay the fine and basically just plead guilty and will dismiss.
Got the settlement. There's the settlement they bring in, the mandatory settlement under the foreclosures, and they go after the heirs, that dead guy over there. They're going after his heirs, and they'll do it to all of us.
Right, but see, this is what they end up doing. They get you to plea, and they make some money versus no money on top of losing money. See, me, I don't care if you write me a ticket for 50 cents. Damn ticket. He was like, well, for me to fight it and file a suit is going to cost me this much and that much. You know, I just paid the $50. And I'm like, okay, there you go again, copping out. It's not about the money on your end. It should be about your rights and respect. So for me, it, regardless of what they find, they could try to sue me for $1 million and then try to give me a plea for a dollar. I'm not going to take it, because if I owed you $1 million, there's no way you would accept a dollar. That's common sense to me. You see what I mean? So
gotcha.
Me, I love the cost of money. If 75, just say if 50% of the people in all these different states knew about this and are being brought in these courts would countersue. I don't think people realize how much money we can cost them. I don't think people realize how many cases will continue to get dismissed. I don't think how many people realize that they may be put on a do not disturb list because we're losing money messing with this company.
Okay, question. You just said countersue, true. How would someone who just heard you say that with their light bulb going off going, I want to countersue, but what the heck do I do? Now, again, we got to remind people we are not attorneys. We're strictly discussing things that we have seen done or heard of being done. The remedy is different for each person. But when you say countersue, how would you yourself go about countersuing? If someone was listening to this wanting to know how you would proceed doing it, how do you countersue on a traffic ticket?
Well, it's not just a counter ticket. It's how would you sue on any suit against you. Here's what people need to realize. Every time you're being brought into the court, you're being sued. If you're being sued, we need to look at these, because it's all civil. There is no criminal nothing in regards to this. Yeah, they enacted criminal statutes and so on and so forth, but this is all civil because it's a collection of debt. This whole thing is a collection of debt. So, excuse me. Now, countersuing, you can countersue in any, regardless of what the charge is. And people need to look at small claims court. Watch TV.
Let's circle back. If you have a traffic ticket and you want to countersue, are you filing a countersuit in small claims, or are you filing a countersuit in a civil court and attaching it to your traffic ticket, say?
Well, I don't attach it to anything. Like if it was a case that's initiated by the state, I would countersue within that court. Because if you look at the state rule, the state trial rules, it addresses the issue in regards to a counterclaim. When if the state is suing you and you counter their claim, they're making a claim. That's exactly what they're doing. If their claim is invalid and you have a superior claim to theirs, you do the same thing they did. But you are
so in a traffic ticket. In a traffic ticket, if I had a red light ticket for say $100, and instead of going in and standing in front of the table there for the $100 ticket, where would I then file that counterclaim against? Because that would be the county or the city municipality that's coming after us for the ticket. So where would I file a counterclaim on that, or would I handle it differently?
Well, you know, you would file it in the court. You would file it where they filed it at. First of all, in most states, when they issue you a ticket, you have to dispute it for it to go to court. You either pay it or dispute it and ask for a trial or a court date.
Gotcha.
You know, that's how it works. So what you do is you dispute it, deny it, get a court date, and automatically you need to file a counterclaim and then file that counterclaim into that case. Now when
gotcha.
You go to court, your counterclaim is actually the claim that's supposed to be heard. If you look into the trial rules, once you file a counterclaim, like for the state of Indiana, the prosecutor or the district attorney or whoever it may be has an obligation and a duty to respond to that counterclaim within 20 days.
So your counterclaim takes priority. Your counterclaim then takes priority over their
exactly.
initial ticket or initial finding against you. So now basically then when you file this counterclaim, that becomes your counterclaim in the court system. So there, that makes sense. And that, see, that's what I was trying to get to. So it's very simple that when you stand and deny the ticket, you are then having, then you write up your counterclaim and enter it into that case.
Right. And if you don't and you disputing the ticket, if you don't, you're going in as a defendant. If you
gotcha.
Counter their claim, you're a plaintiff. They're now the defendant in your case.
And it's basically just a letter. It's basically just a letter to the court stating your counterclaim. Is how I, when people say, oh, it's so hard, I always try to explain, basically it's just a letter. You just have to format that letter to the acceptance of the court documents, correct?
Well, pretty much. I wouldn't label it as a letter, but it's as simple as a letter. It's not really complicated. People would be like, is there a template out there for counterclaim? Yeah, you know, I could provide possibly some templates depending on what the case is about, or if an individual is a security party, there are different ones I'd use. But a counterclaim basically is you
denying their claim, denying what you've done.
Well, not really. What you're doing is you're filing. It kind of rolls like that, but the best way that I could say it is that you sue me in court saying I owe you $10,000. And matter of fact, I know just look at small claims court. You sue me in small claims court. I get the claim. You know, the sheriff delivers the notice or whatever, the subpoena or whatever. And I'm like, hold up. Is Renee saying I owe her $10,000? Hold up for a second. I paid her $10,000 back, and she owed me, and I lumped her an additional 10. So she owes me 10 grand. I don't owe her anything. Now, if I go to that small claims court without issuing a counterclaim or filing a counterclaim, odds are, I'm going to lose I may not get my money back, but if I got proof and receipts or canceled checks to prove that I gave you your 10 back, I may not lose the 10. But I don't
gotcha.
Get my 10 that you owe me unless I countersue. So
gotcha.
If you filed a suit against me and I know, in fact, I paid you your 10 back and you owe me 10, I'm going to countersue for 20. Your suit is for 10. I'm going to file a countersuit for $20,000. I'm going to state the facts. Facts are, Renee loaned me $10,000 on this date. Fact two, on this date, I not only gave Renee her $10,000 back, I also loaned her an additional $10,000. Fact three,
gotcha.
So on and so forth. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to now, instead of coming into small claims court as a defendant, I'm coming into small claims court as a plaintiff.
Understood very, very well. Very, very well put. I have a quick question. We have a caller that has their hand up in queue. And
sure.
Would you mind if I brought a caller in real quick?
Absolutely not. I like callers. I don't you know,
okay,
don't like...
hang on here. Caller in the 810 area code, you're on air. Do you have a question for True?
Yeah, True. This is Frisbee.
Well, hey there. Thank you for joining
hi.
Us.
Yeah,
hello.
I was listening to you guys. I think I met you in that law group, the Tender for Law.
Who, me?
Well, not you personally, but, you know, your text.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And anyways, kind of I was doing my study, you was doing your study. It's very interesting that you mention a counterclaim Now, let's say you get a ticket for no seatbelt. The counterclaim would be such. Like, my question is, what would your counterclaim be for that?
Well, my specific counterclaim would be basically something to the fact that I'm not obligated to put on a seatbelt. You know, I would word it a lot different, but this is what it would boil
right
down to, is that I'm not obligated to wear a seatbelt, for one. I'm not operating in commerce. They only can regulate commerce, and it's my
driver.
I'm traveling. You know,
traveling.
They can't.
Where's the evidence that the law applies to me, right?
You can use that, but I try to stay away from saying they laws don't apply to me, because then they try to put you in this category. What I end up doing is taking their laws, codes, and statutes and breaking it down with mean, and it clearly shows it doesn't apply to me without me going into court and them trying to make me look like some type of idiot that don't want to do this or do that. No, I'm bringing you
right,
the law.
Right, like a non-sovereign citizen or whatever, right, non-compliant.
Right, so what my point would be to prove to them, I don't even ever say that they laws don't apply to me. What I do is I read the laws themselves and I prove by the meaning of them and the meaning of the words that it doesn't apply to me. Other people,
right,
want to, your laws don't apply to me, they're going to have a field day with you guys. All you got to do, if it doesn't apply to you, point to the law, break it down, and prove that it doesn't apply to you instead of going there.
Right.
Your laws don't apply to me. They apply to
right. Instead of asking, show them that how the law doesn't apply to you. And okay, I get you.
Right. See, one of the best things that I like is Article 1, Section 23 of the Indiana Constitution, which clearly
states.
I believe that's the one that says, the General Assembly shall not grant to any citizen or class of citizens any special privileges or immunities that upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all. What that is exactly telling you is that the state cannot give the police special privileges or immunities unless they apply to you. Now, of course, you don't get to wear a badge. Of course, you don't get to have this pretty little blue uniform, but you do have police powers, and it's called a citizen's arrest. Why do you think they get trying to get people away from understanding what a citizen's arrest is?
Right.
So when they exempt certain public officials from property taxes, the Constitution clearly states they cannot grant to any class of citizens special privileges or immunities that upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all. So if they tax exempt on their property, so am I. And the rest of the state of Indiana, they didn't like that in the court. I was using that when Carol and Dave came. They really didn't like that.
Yeah, I was writing too and raising my eyebrows at them and giving them the peace sign and all kinds of stuff like, oh, wow, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, he did real well, and they knew, and they were skirting around, but really and truly, he had them all fenced in. There was no getting – he had them double-fenced in, Frisbee.
Right, and about the counterclaim in regards to traffic, I'm going to tell you, people, that is one of the easiest things to do. I'm going to give y'all a jewel, which they trying to get away from right now, but I proved it in my case, and the video is on YouTube. Here's what people didn't understand when I countersued. When I countersued and I sued the state, city, county, because, again, mind you, I was being sued by the city and the county and the state, right? Mm-hmm. So if the city, county, and state is suing me, I'm going to file a countersuit against the city, state, and county, as well as the judicial officer that's attempting to basically administer my estate without my permission. Okay,
right.
Which is in the trust. So here's the key thing that people don't understand is that when you countersue and you sue the state, none of their colleagues could oversee the case. So to break that down, if I sue one judge, all his colleagues, he can't point somebody else.
Yeah, they're all shut down.
Because those are his colleagues. The judge admitted it in the court. They was like, we got to transfer your case outside the county because you sued one of my colleagues, and that's a conflict flick the ventures. Didn't you sue a judge, sir? I said, absolutely. Sued the state of Indiana, county, city, so on and so forth, as well as the mayor and some other public officials, because they are responsible. Well, we have to transfer your case outside the county because no judge in the county can hear a case over you because it's a conflict of interest because they're our colleagues. I'm like, well, if you send my case to anywhere in the state of Indiana, it's a conflict of interest because all y'all are colleagues of each other. Y'all work for the Bar Association. By countersuing them, no judge would take the case in the county. After I went through about three or four of them, they realized that I wasn't going to play their game. And the only other option was to send me to a racist town. You see what I'm saying? Out in Johnson County. And basically try to misuse the law because all attorneys and judges in the state are colleagues of each other. So if none in this county can hear the case over me because y'all colleagues of each other, none in this entire state could hear a case over me. And then if we want to go to the federal part of it, no judge in this country could hear a case over me if I have a suit against their colleague.
Right.
So what did they do?
That's what did they do? Say that again?
Yes, what did they do?
What was the outcome?
What was the outcome?
What they said was the outcome they ruled against me, but if you go to the record, public records, the case is still open. No judgments on the book. They said they ordered me not to ever have any dogs in the city. I still have four. Animal care control don't come down much.
Gotcha.
Police literally don't mess with me. Now, if somebody calls the police on me, they have an obligation to respond. But if you look at the videos, they stand out at the gate. They don't try to force their way on my property. As a matter of fact, we can look at how I handled the case with them trying to give my sell part of my property to my neighbor. This
okay, hang on just a second.
Years.
True, we have a lot of background noise right now.
It's not coming from my end. It's quiet here. I'm in the house by myself.
There we go. It's gone now, so that's good. So whoever was doing it, we're good now. Go
I
ahead,
think my
Drew.
Mic
and,
was feeding back.
There
well,
you
know
go,
we got
dear.
Agents
you.
On the line. You know, they're out there messing with the frequencies as well.
Yeah, and boy, isn't that fun. So go ahead, Drew.
But
I'm
what
sorry
I was
interrupted
great.
You, but now we can hear you.
But what I was getting ready to say, just as an example, is like they allegedly at a surplus sale sold my neighbor part of the land, part of my property. And it
Who
went to
they?
Small claims.
Who are they that supposedly had a surplus sale?
Well, the city, the state.
Tax sale.
County assessor. With the it was in regards to property taxes.
Gotcha.
Which it clearly states that if my property is not being used as an investment and is being used as a primary place of residence, it's exempt from taxation. They even provide forms for you to basically file for tax exemption. I'll be doing some things on that as well to start showing people how to basically use their rules and get your property exempt from taxation. That's you know I have to find the time to put all that together, but. The moral to the story in regards to that is we push in 2 years and she still has yet to be able to get possession of the property. She sued me in small claims court. When we immediately went in small claims court, they called us first. That was a shock to me. They called us first, and the judge basically it was a female black judge. And she basically asked the neighbor, she was like, how did you acquire this property? Because she knew what time it was. I was filing a countersuit in that case, and they wanted me to pay the sheriff to deliver a subpoena to the almost 40-something defendants. And at the time, I didn't have the funds, so I just said, I'll just deal with it without filing it, you know. But when we went in court, the judge basically told her, she said, I can't hear this case. She said, this is a unique case, and she looked at me. She said, how did you acquire deed to the property? And she said, at the tax sale surplus, and the judge kind of shook her head, you know, like, wow. And then she told her, she was like, you know, basically I don't have any jurisdiction to hear this case. Now, this lady took me to small claims court to try to get a writ of possession. The judge wouldn't roll with it. She told her, you know, if I was you, I would. You're going to have to file this in, I think it was Superior Court first, or, yeah, well, I think it was, I think it was municipal first. I'm not really sure. I think it was municipal, though. And she said, what I would suggest you do is get an attorney. She said, you could do it yourself, but then she looked at me, and she looked back at her, said, but I highly suggest that you hire an attorney.
Yep, very good.
She dismissed her case. You know, she dismissed her case. And what she did was she refiled it in municipal court, I believe. I looked at the records. Soon as that case hit that judge's desk, within, I believe, 30 minutes, that judge basically threw that damn court case out of his courtroom. Mm-hmm. He sent it to another court, which was Superior Court. And it went to Superior Court, and it probably sat there for almost a week. And that judge got it up out of his office, and they sent it to township court. It's been sitting in the township court on the judge's desk or in their file or whatever. They're doing it for about almost a year now, 8 months. They will, and that's why she mad at me and keep calling the police on me and doing this stupid stuff. But how are you mad at me because you gave the state some money for claiming to be my property, which you didn't give them to them for my property. You bought a piece of paper. And you're mad at me because they won't help you get possession of the property that they were attempting to unlawfully and illegally steal from me. This is what people don't know when y'all go buy them houses at the tax sales and things. Y'all don't.
And that's where that's exactly. And those tax sales and everything else, people who are going into that know there's fraud in the underlying documents. And if you're buying fraud and you're buying illegal, you're buying stolen property. And that's why those judges are throwing it out of their court. They know it's stolen property, and they don't want to be involved with stolen property, even though the county itself tried to steal your property. Hang on just a minute. Frisbee, I'm going to put you on hold again. Put your hand back up if you'd like to come back in. We have another caller with their hand up right here in the 951 area code. 951,
okay,
you're on the air.
Let me add on to that real quick before I lose my train of thought. Let me add on to about that. Now, anybody that's ever bought a vehicle, I'm going to use this as an example. If you've ever did, this is going to prove my point. If you buy a vehicle and you basically try to transfer that vehicle without putting it in your name first, you're trying to evade taxes. It's against the law. Okay? You cannot buy a vehicle and leave the title open. I know people do it, but you can't do it because you there has to be a chain of custody and transfer of ownership. Now, anybody so when you look at tax sales and things like that, first of all, the state never puts the property in their name. The state leaves the property in the person's name that they took it from until a stupid-ass buyer comes along willing to get an attorney to sign this deed and transfer it over. They won't do it. They won't put it in their name. Why? Because they cannot own property. They're a bankrupt organization. Now, this is the fine print, because you mentioned fine print earlier, and then we can get to the guest, the caller, is people don't read the fine print when they go to these tax sales and surplus sales, because it's right there in your face pre-sale, and they tell you, we're not guaranteeing this property. We're not guaranteeing there's no liens on this property. Well, hell, we're not even guaranteeing that we're giving you the right damn address. Read the fine print on the applications and things in the list. It tells you. That's why they tell you got to do your own research. They may be saying we selling true free man house, but what they not going to do, they not going to guarantee that that's actually my house that they selling. They not going to guarantee that number is actually tied to that what they call parcel. They telling you right now, listen, you buying $1 million car, and we have a title, but we can't say that we can give you a title, but we can't basically
They can't
ensure.
Say it's clean. They can't
right,
say
we
it's
can't,
clean.
We can't say that it's a real title. We just hope that you think it is. That's basically what it boils down to. If you read this, especially for Indiana, and I'm going to find one of these new tax sales coming up, and I'm going to get the fine print out of there, and I'm going to do a video and show people what I'm talking about. Because if I come to buy a $100,000 car from you, and you telling me you cannot guarantee this title, you cannot guarantee that those numbers that you saying is on the title is in fact going to match up on the vehicle itself, why would I buy it from you?
Exactly. And that's like the REOs and the trustee sales with these homes. As Carol and I have found over and over, many addresses are not actually correlating with the property that's being seized. And the people seizing the property, now when you seize property, you're supposed to be able to show clear ownership. And that's the problem. You can't seize something if there is not clear title, but yet they're doing it. Millions of homes across this nation have been seized by people who have no proof. Go ahead.
They're doing them in the shadow court cases by not recording the fact that they got it tucked in as a land contract under a like-lotted number. That's exactly, and then they redock it. So you think this house over here is getting foreclosed on, but little do you know it, in the shadow case, it's running under an anchor property, which would happen to be my daughter's, and usually the house numbers are off on either side, and that's a fact. I know this to be the truth.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that's why I'm, you know, when I start putting, you know, get some extra funding and start working on this documentary, you're going to be one of the main key players in this documentary, because I don't think people understand what you exposing.
No, they don't. People in the
nation.
Well,
I didn't understand it. True, we connected the dots, and something pulled me to you. I reached out to you. I took extraordinary efforts to reach out to you. I'm a grandmother who can't make videos, and I'm like having my grandson come over and put me on camera because I got to talk to this guy. Right?
Definitely.
Yeah, and I mean,
definitely.
It was meant to be. That's just how it is. This is how it's going to go. It's going to be over with soon for them, because he is winning, and they already ruled the tax sale was illegal and the deed wasn't right, so that's a win.
That's a
huge win,
true.
They ruled the deed to be invalid. And what's funny about it, this company, this was a very well-known real estate company here, and they actually purchased the deed to my house, allegedly,
ooh,
right? He went to court, and Carol and Dave and them came. This was a couple few months ago. We gave them the business. We was in there about four hours or something, and the judge basically took everything under advisement and ruled a little bit later down the road. And what he did was he tried not to void the sale, because if they voided the sale, I set them back at least 3 to 4 years. And what he tried to do was not void the sale, but voided the deed and told the people that in the order, which I still got to do this video to show people the order as well as the exhibits, which proved that the debt was settled anyway. I'm going to get to that this week. But the judge came back and said, even if I didn't recoup or pay the almost $3,000, which was yesterday, and I didn't pay it, that the state can come back and try it again. Well, let's go at it again. Now, what he told them was, even if True Free Man don't come back and pay that, I'm sorry. We got to take the deed we gave to you, because that deed ain't no good. It's invalid. So by it being invalid, even if he don't claim it back or don't – I didn't claim it. Even if he don't give up those Federal Reserve notes, you can't get it. You can't get it at all, regardless of what happened. Sorry we sold y'all a fake deed, but, hey, he caught us. You can't you might as well go, you know, go back where you was and try to purchase another one. But he tried
True, the other thing is here is what others may not understand, because some people have been drawn, like they'll have a realtor who takes them and helps them buy a home that's in foreclosure. The people end up with this house, and they don't even have a clue that they've been defrauded. They have no idea. So what people can do also, if they have done this, now obviously your people know they've done something wrong. They know they've bought stolen property. There's insurances for E&O insurance, liability insurance. There's all kinds of insurances in place, because we know insurance is what is the driving force in almost all of these actions. because insurance is being paid left and right behind the scenes for default.
Wow, you brought up another good point. Damn, that's crazy because, okay, now check this out. People, you know how everybody out there saying, well, they're double dipping. Everybody wrong. Everybody wrong. Even me when I said they was double dipping. You know why? We left out the insurance. They meddling
yep.
triple dip. They're getting paid on the public side. They're getting paid, which is what you pay them monthly. They're getting paid on the private side, which is the credit that was issued based upon your signature from the United States government and the Treasury. And they're getting paid when they basically file a claim with the insurance company when you're in default.
Exactly.
And the thing is,
this is key true, because no matter where you go, there is never going to be a situation where insurance is done away with, because without the insurance, the fraud cannot perpetuate. So there's no money in doing this if there's no insurance behind the scenes paying multiple times. That's part of the reason.
You made a good point. And guess what the insurance is based up off this corporate fiction that they have given us, i.e. the all-cap name, Social Security number, so on and so forth. We are the insurance.
Exactly. We are an insurance policy. We are the chattel by which they collect and launder funds through every action in these court cases. Remember, judges are insured and bonded. Attorneys are insured and bonded. Each case is bonded three times. There's bonds, and people don't understand. They're learning now that a bond is just another name for insurance. When someone has to post a bond, all they're doing is posting insurance that, i.e., someone's going to show up to court, or that the court has a remedy if you are hurt or harmed.
Exactly.
And people didn't know about that. So I think it's really key that we start. About a year and a half ago, I started, almost 2 years ago now, really pushing the insurance end of it, because I learned that in 2011, the attorney generals, while they were doing the big lawsuit against Bank of America and all of them, they were having trouble getting discovery. Imagine that, Drew. They were having trouble getting discovery. And so they thought, well, what are we going to do? We've got to hold these. So what do? They look to the E&O and the liability insurance, and the next thing we know, boom, it's like a bomb goes off with all these settlements, bam, 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 like dominoes across the nation, because what they
yep.
found was a pattern. We take them to court, let people think, let the public think that we're doing something. Then what we do is we bring in the insurance. Then we settle, and no one says any harm, no harm, no foul, insurance is paid. And yet the people, the homeowners, the property owners, are still left holding the bag and still being foreclosed on. Because why? Because once a default is in, insurance is paying again. And the only way for the last part of the insurance to be paid, whether it be Fannie Mae or whoever, they have to do a foreclosure. So they're all involved in this. HAMP is a fraud. These attorneys doing modifications are committing fraud because fraud is covering fraud. It's all one big felony. And my contention is, okay, it's all one big felony. Give people back their homes. Give them paid damages back, every dime they've put into that, because that really, they were the first line in the security investment, even though it was their primary residence where they shouldn't have had to pay taxes. Property taxes, we were used as an investment tool. So if you're going to use us as an investment tool and unjustly enrich yourself and unjustly collect insurance, you cannot take the insurance and the home. Leave the home alone. Pay us a little bit of our investment back, which would be treble damages, and let's all move on. And anybody that thinks that can't be done in this country is kidding themselves. And the only thing we're doing
can.
Is
you,
she...
You know what happened? Everybody would stop paying their mortgage and actually countersue these mortgage companies. We can get 75% of the population to stop paying and countersue. You know how many trillions of dollars it's going to cost the mortgage industry as well as these attorneys who will not be guaranteed to recoup anything?
Exactly. Except remember, they've already made over and over and over and over again. Some of these tranches have had those papers. Now, remember, it's just paper that they sell into these securities. It is not a real securitized home. It's it's a debt that is not securitized. It's what do you call it when it's not attached? Oh my goodness. Well, anyhow,
an allowance.
Unsecured.
It's
an unsecured.
Separated.
It's all unsecured obligation, and it's strictly in an income stream that they've put into a securitized. So there is no mortgage. The mortgage is gone. It's a securitized investment, which means they've taken that piece of paper and sold it over and over and over and over again. So even though we say three or four times because of insurance, these criminals have sold that piece of paper 30, 40, 100 times. And when it comes to foreclosure now...
Why do you think when you sign these mortgages and things like that, there's all these blank pages that are intentionally left blank? They're left blank for additional endorsements.
And also on the backside, what we don't see, because they are two-sided. Carol and I have talked about this and seen this multiple times. There's two sides to all these documents, but they're only showing one side. And we do know that a lot of code is used and little insignias on backsides of documents that we don't see. So if you don't ask the court for pictures of both sides of the documents, of the originals, you really don't know what's going on. And many times, I know for myself, true, I found documents in several counties using my identity, and you can see clearly where the document says blank page. Well, of course, like you just said, because if it has a blank page, they can insert any page they want into that to make it appear as if you truly, or the identity they're using against you, has created this deed of trust, which is the perpetual motion of deed of trust, notice of default, rescission of default, new deed of trust. That is the pattern throughout the nation of land records. And that's where the insurances are paid in between, is for the notice of default and the foreclosure, and then the rescission of foreclosure and new deed of trust. Insurances are paid all through that pattern.
And
so
then
go ahead,
going into that even more, though, Renee, to go on top of what you just said, every time they do that to one home, they do it a total of three times, just like True said. The number three is key. The square root of three, or three square is nine. That's key in the judicial file. So you can follow their systems, what I'm saying. All of
right.
us have now at this point. Wouldn't you say, True?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I like what Renee said because, you know, see, we have to think outside the box. And like when people were asking for the originals in this mortgage, I don't think people were saying, I want a copy of both sides of every document that part of the original. That right there was a great comment.
You know, I got a certified copy of Rachel's mortgage for the first time. You know, the attorney that came into this case, Tammy L. Ortman, brought in a fake document. It was our two-sided mortgage, and it was two-sided. Both sides had print. That was the original. We put it into the court case as that, as such. So the other one that was from the land records was one-sided only, and I've been to get them before. They only give me one-sided. I went this time to prove that the attorney entered another false mortgage, because they're still using Rachel's case as an anchor case. So property's still running through there. And sure enough, that clerk certified me a double copy of the first one. So now I have a certified copy without it being a double, and then she gives me another one, double copy. And that's the first time I've ever seen or heard of them giving you a double copy paper that's filed in the land records.
Okay, now when you're saying double copy, Carol, you're meaning both sides,
double
correct?
Double-paged, I'm sorry. Page one of two and two of two, so it's got print on both sides. She gave me a certified one like I have of the original that we copied, so I think they're copying evidence as people put it in, too. If anybody goes in and rebuts, they use our original, because remember, the crook gave us the file, so I have the original,
right.
So I have the template.
And they created another document based on your document is what they did.
Well, not only that, she did first. The judge allowed it in. And then I go over to the land records, and the lady's helping me. But she does give me a certified copy, and it's double-sided. And she did not know that, except for the one that I put in.
I think she gave you the private. See, what people don't realize is there's two sides to every single thing. There's a good side and a bad side to all people. There's there's a positive and a negative side to a battery. There's a good side and a bad side to the court. There are good police, there are bad police. There are good family members, there are bad. It's two sides to everything. There's a public side to a case. There's a private side to a case. There's two, everything runs on a two-way street, but they convince us to think it's a one-way or believe it's a one-way. That's the best way I can explain it, and it's just crazy. You need to.
Well, you know, True, there's
something
good.
You ever feel like you're going up a one-way street, True? There's that word up again. You ever feel like you're going up a one-way street?
Yeah, that word up coming back in. What would you, Grace, say, Renee?
I was going to say, Carol, one of the interesting things we started really discussing, besides anchor dates, because when Carol mentions something, my mind starts going, and I'll be calling her from wherever I'm at. She posted a picture of a little girl looking in a mirror. And this is the thing. What we see is a reflection of our experiences. So, i.e., when we look in a mirror and we see ourselves, sometimes we say, oh, my gosh, that's not me. That's not how my mind sees me. Well, it's the same thing with documents. We are looking basically at a document as if we were looking straight onto it. This is it. This is. But you know what? When you start realizing that the reflection of that document is not what you perceived you were actually getting into, it's just like you looking in the mirror and remembering yourself being 17 and now you're an old person. That document is not the document that you thought you were engaging in. You thought you were buying a home. You thought you were buying a mortgage. But what you were actually
isn't. You got to lay down and be the document. You got to lay down and be the document.
But what you actually ended up with was you were used. The mere reflection of that document used you looking into that document as something very different. You were
used
as an investment.
My lens in my head used me. I have a lens that takes a picture before I ever even see. People aren't getting behind their ego. They're not getting above it. They're not getting above the primal ego.
Yeah, and that goes above most people's head, though. So in order to get them to understand.
Somebody's got to say it.
Well, no, but we have to say it and explain it. Maybe one of you two, Blaine, because what we're talking about right now is very
Frisbee did the other day.
Yeah. Well, but it still didn't settle with people. We still got questions about.
Well, look at it like that mirror. Look at it like that mirror, that little girl looking at herself in the mirror. You think that when you look in a mirror, you're seeing yourself, and that is you. And you notice you're putting on your makeup, you need to pluck your eyebrows, whatever. So you think that's you, and you get used to seeing that face every day, but it is just a reflection. But it's actually a reflection of a reflection. Because when you first look, you have a lens. It's taken a picture. It's a reflection already.
Right.
In your eyes, in your head.
And that's why
you're not just straight seeing. You've got a reflection. That's what caused you to see, because light bounced off the dark matter, or the dark, because of the light scale.
Exactly.
Okay, Renee, you want to go ahead? We had that caller waiting for a while.
Let's go ahead and bring this caller in. And let's see, they have their hand up. Let's see, area code 951, ending in 0472, you're on air. Did you have a question or a comment for True Freeman?
I had a comment. My name is Ron. I'm a friend of Carol. I'm on her Facebook page. We spoke
wonderful.
The other day.
Hi, Ron. Welcome.
Hi, Ron.
Hi. And I'm going to just cut to the chase if you want to hear a little bit more about it. But I've been my house foreclosed back in 2010. I'm still in the house. Never left it. They tried three times to throw me out. I defeated them at unlawful detainer court. And back and forth to different court systems. And I'll just tell you this. On the 25th of July, I served a summons to the bank. 21 days later, they have not had a lawyer on the case, assigned to the case. They're in default. I served default papers on them just Monday.
Wonderful for you, Ron. Thank you for this information, because that's key. What
yes,
you just
congrats.
Did is key. Congratulations. You have become.
Now, let me about what
go
he
ahead,
said.
True.
He said he said he's never left his home. Nobody ever leaves their home, even the people who think they left their home. The key word people need to realize in what they are doing is they are abandoning their property. What this man is doing, he's refusing to abandon his property, because if he abandons it, it allows them to come in and take possession of it.
Correct.
So
Ron, what do you think about this? What I think true, and Carol, you can chime in on this too, is when you filed and no attorney for the bank would respond, because we know the bank isn't the one who foreclosed on you. They had a third-party unsecured debt claim to be foreclosing for the bank, but we know the bank didn't foreclose. So therefore, if the bank didn't foreclose, there is no attorney for the bank that can come in and even refute what you're saying.
I think these attorneys are starting to realize that too.
Well,
this
because
was a quiet title action.
It is a quiet title action.
It's a quiet title action. I've been listening to a lot of people over, I don't know, 5 years or whatever. What I have I recorded with the county recorder's office and also with the Secretary of State. I recorded a land patent. I mean, in other words, the land patent's already been recorded. All I did was claim the forever benefit on that land patent for the patch of land that my house sits on for. And nobody has ever contested it. And they had their own agent to try to throw me out. And so, you know, they got a lot of stuff to overcome. I mean, I had the independent foreclosure review pay me a settlement check. The Attorney General of California paid me a little settlement check. And, you know, they got a lot of stuff to overcome. You know, and then I sent them a negotiable instrument. Huh?
What state are you in?
I'm in California.
Oh, okay.
You're actually a neighbor of mine, Ron.
As a matter of fact, I know you, Savelle. I met him, so I know him.
Wrong name. Okay, continue.
Yeah, but anyways, I sent them a negotiable instrument. Whether it was a good instrument or not, they accepted it. And that was over 3 years ago.
They accepted mine, too, but they trying to back out of it now. That's funny.
Well, now they got a problem, because now they're in total default, and they don't even have a room to negotiate with, because I'm not going to negotiate.
Not only that, if you submitted a proper negotiable instrument, which people don't realize the negotiable instrument thing, people are trying to make, they're trying to over-exaggerate and explain it. You can take a crayon and write on a piece of paper and create a negotiable instrument. It's really that simple. And if you create the proper negotiable instrument according with the Uniform Commercial Codes, they are obligated to accept it. That's why I'll tell people on the line, the taxes that was allegedly owed on this property, I wasn't giving them Federal Reserve notes. I gave them a negotiable instrument, which was a check off a closed account, which is, in fact, not closed. They brought that into evidence, used it as an exhibit. This is the video I've been supposed to been doing to show people, but I haven't had the time. They brought in this is where they messed up. It's going to be some people lose their job, because what they done by bringing that negotiable instrument into the court, I never submitted it. They brought it in and entered it in as an exhibit. They brought in part of the private side of the case. That's where they messed up at, because on their exhibit, it clearly states they copied the check, and then they have this printout that they printed on it, and it says, "Thank you for your payment. Please keep this as proof of receipt." You mean to tell me y'all enter this into the court record exactly as that, and you're trying to say that it wasn't settled? You just entered in the receipt for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they caught that. But that's what I'm using, because I know, and I'm going to give credit to the first people that brought that out in regards to the closed checking account. And far as I know, that was Fred and Nina. I don't know if they are agents or not. What I do know is I researched their information, and I could confirm that they were, for a fact, 80% correct. I've done my further research and then started using them, helped a buddy discharge a $41,000 IRS debt, and I believe it's still discharged to this day. But, see, once I showed him what to do, he ran off, and I don't know what he's been doing. I seen him probably a couple months ago. He never mentioned it. I'm still assuming that it was set off. They actually, in fact, the IRS even sent him a refund check. I told him to send it back. If you cash it, you're going to that's where you're going to get in trouble. If I was you, I would endorse, if you've done something like that and got a check back, endorse that and send it off to another debt collector that you allegedly owe some debt, or another company or whatever, because what you're doing, you are attempting to lawfully pay down a national debt. This is what they don't want us to understand how to do. You can do it through negotiable instruments, promissory notes. All of them are negotiable instruments. The closed checking account, you look up with a closed checking account, it's not closed. If we start reading, we can defeat these people, because these attorneys don't read. They get trained a form of procedure or protocol.
So what you're saying is, if there's an account that says it's closed, it's not closed?
No. There's no such thing as a closed account, how people see it. You can go to any legal dictionary.
And that's what I used, Carol.
That's what you used?
Good.
That's what I
Good.
Used.
Good.
Okay,
Good.
We both on the same page then. But see, it's because we understand it. This is how we able to hold them off until the time comes when we actually defeat them. A closed account is an account that you cannot add to it or take from it. Simply speaking, you can't go in and deposit a check into this account because it's not open publicly. You cannot go in and withdraw from this account because it's not open publicly. But it's open on the private side, and it clearly states, when you look up the legal definition of the word in any of these legal dictionaries, that tell you that a closed account is an account that no further credits or debits can be transacted through that account, but that account is to remain open for adjustment and set off. Now, if
revolving door on their side, the revolving doors.
Right, but if that's your account and you can't add nothing to it or take nothing from it, but your account is to stay open for adjustment and set off, they gave you a private remedy to adjust and set off the public debt private.
Very good.
That's why I use it, because I understood it. Fred and Nina done a very good job with their presentation. A lot of people
now,
do
did they have a video on this, Drew? Do Fred and Nina have a video on this or a YouTube?
Multiple videos. They was out there doing seminars and things, and what I did, I don't know if it's been removed from YouTube. Type in Fred and Nina closed checking accounts. If it's not there, I did download it. I do have them on disk.
Okay, so if anybody wants to find that, Carol, can we add that to our links?
I can add it to True Freeman's show today after I review it and put in everything I think would relate to what he's talking about, so it's easy for our listeners to get to it.
Perfect. Thank you.
And then, I broke down the remittance coupons, the payment vouchers, payment voucher, remittance, coupon, they all are proof of payment. I've done multiple videos, and I mean, years ago, and these videos got 200 and 300 hits. I'm like,
Yeah, 2011. Well, I'm some of those hits, I'll tell you that. I've been through
I
them
am
all,
too.
Almost.
Right, but see, it's... Oh, man, it's amazing what they're doing. When they send us these bills, people say, oh, that's a check, but they never prove it. I prove that they are checks. Now they here in Indiana, they removing the word remittance, trying to remove the word coupon. Remittance is proof of payment. Coupon is proof of payment. Voucher is proof of payment, so on and so forth. And we don't get it. They're giving us a remedy. That's why we to tear them off, endorse it on the back, and resubmit it. They don't say, and they try to mess up the words on it. It says, please return this bottom portion with proof of payment, with your payment. What they're telling you is detect this, resubmit it, because it's your payment. What you're supposed to do is no different than the check, endorse the back, and send it back in. If you do all them things on the front of every men's coupon or payment voucher, just deface the instrument. If I'm working at a job and I get paid at the end of the week, the check is already formatted and written out. If I write a bunch of stuff on the front, UCC 1-308, all this garbage, right? And it's not garbage. It would be garbage in this sense because I'm using it. I'm not using it correctly. Now, if I take that check that was issued to me by a company and I write all this stuff on the front and then turn it over and sign the back, and then I go below this line, they're telling me not to go below because that's specifically for endorsements, then what I have just done is I have just defaced the instrument, and they're not going to accept it, nor are they obligated to accept it. All we're supposed to do is sign the back of those remittance coupons and send them back. You even look up the definitions of the words and what those instruments are, it clearly tells you that the top portion is basically your receipt. The bottom portion is the check. Well, the top portion is the stub. The bottom portion is the receipt. Look at your paychecks. Well, now they're making everything digital and on these cards. But remember when you got the checks, you had this big portion at the top, okay, which was your check stub. You had the preparated lines, and then you had the check in which you detach. You keep the receipt or the stub, and you submit the check. A lot of people are doing all this A for V stuff. That stuff valid, but people are doing it wrong. It's like
what I'm hearing you say, for people who have never heard this before, is say you got your utility bill. Where it is at the top, then you have your perforation, and then you have your bottom. So you take the ticket at the bottom, your coupon, you turn it over and sign it and send that back in, and that you're done?
Yeah.
Send a check with it. You don't send any payment as far as federal, notes with it or any kind of obligation back to them other than you take that coupon or your check, basically, is what it is now, what I'm hearing you say at the bottom of this. You put in the amount paid, you turn it over, you sign it, you send that back, and you have now fulfilled that obligation without sending a check, money order, or anything else with it.
Yes and no, because you are sending a check. You're just sending a check that was sent to you. It's a dividend or interest certificate.
Gotcha.
And it's basically... And so you're exactly right, but you are sending the check. You're sending the check that they sent you. They sent it to you for you to endorse it and send it back, but yet we don't – why do people think they want you to send that back? They have your bill in the damn computer. They know how much you owe. Why can't you just send the money? You can. And if you don't send that instrument back and you just send them Federal Reserve notes or a check off your so-called private account or your public account, whatever you want to call it, they're going to do is print out another check so that that's the portion that they submit to the Treasury to get the credit. The Federal Reserve.
So basically, there you have again your double dipping. They are making it's more like they're making interest in the same amount of the bill. It's basically their investment coming back to them. That's their income.
Yep. It's
so
amazing, but see.
They're stealing our equity. They're taking our equity.
They're stealing our equity. That's a good point, Carol. They're stealing our equity.
Well, it's the same. That's...
And the biggest thing people need to remember and realize and understand is stop listening to these gurus that are trying to convince you to abandon your trust. Please stop listening to these people. You need to be making a claim in regards to that trust, and it needs to be a superior claim, which is what I did. I made a claim. I claimed the Social Security number. I claimed the name. I claimed everything tied to it. I claimed any public or private banking accounts, public or private trust accounts that may or may not be. I claimed.
Now, how did you do that, Drew? You're saying you claimed it all. For those listening who are questioning, how did you claim that? What procedure did you take to claim it, to claim all of that?
I thought outside the box and said, well, if that's mine, and people are saying that they're secretly making a claim against it, I'm going to make a public claim against it by way of an affidavit. and I thought about what I wanted to claim, and I just formatted it in the form of an affidavit and told him exactly what I'm claiming, and that's how it's going to be. If y'all going to rebut this, you got 21 days. You need a little extra time. I'll give you a little more time. That's no problem, because you're not going to be able to submit a superior claim to the name or my name, whatever, however people want to look at it, or the property tied to it.
Okay, so then it won't come up against him. Nobody can, and that's so brilliant, and it's so simple.
It's so simple, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the kindergartner here. So what I'm hearing you say is that I am in kindergarten, and I have my crayons, and I'm going to write this letter, this affidavit. I'm going to title it Affidavit of Truth. Is that what I'm titling it, Affidavit of Truth?
And you can title it Affidavit of Truth. You can title it Affidavit of Fact. You can title it Affidavit of Truth and Claim of Right.
Claim. Okay. So now I'm going to write this out, and I'm going to say, I, little Johnny Smith, am claiming my birth certificate, my Social Security number. I'm claiming my home as my true property. I'm claiming and continue on like that. And then what else would you say in there? Because that's very simple. I'm claiming, I'm claiming, I'm claiming. I'm like for me, I did an affidavit claiming the grant deed that was the original grant deed I had on my home that then was forged. I did not claim. I refuted the grant deed that was forged, and I claimed the grant deed that I knew was in existence before that that they did not give me. So I claimed the legal deed or grant deed and refuted the forged grant deed. So I could have, in the same document then, as little Johnny, claimed my birth certificate as trustee now, taking over my birth certificate because I'm very capable of handling it, and my Social Security number. And what else would I say in that very simple document? I've claimed all of this. What else would I say? Just simply, you could do this in three paragraphs.
Really, you can't. I mean, it could be a one-page document. It really is really so simple. It's like, what are you claiming? For the people who listen, I understand why you do it, why you ask the questions like that, and that's what needs to be done. So I understand. So when you do it, hey, I'm right with you because the people need to understand. So I would claim the things that you just said. I would claim I'm going to make the claim that I'm claiming any public and or private trust that may be associated with that name and that number. I'm claiming any property associated with that name and that number. Because people say, well, your title, your true title is with the state and this, that, there, other, so you don't own your car. People are telling you you can't own property. That is the most asinine thing I've ever heard. Only people I know cannot own property is slaves and banks. Slaves and banks pretty much. Probably a few more. But if you telling me that I can't, so I have to put it in a trust basically to be able to control it. It doesn't make sense because slaves cannot own property. A man can own property. So when people tell me I can't, that's what makes me prove that I can. So I'm going to make a claim against all these things, the public trust, private trust, any treasury account that may exist or may not exist, private accounts, public accounts, banking accounts, anything associated with that name and that number, everything, birth certificate, certificate of birth, Social Security card, Social Security account, any public or private trust, any automobiles associated with that name, any property associated with that name, court cases, whatever it may, I'm making a claim, and I talked about it on my show. I'll try to find that video in which I did make that claim. And you make a claim. So in order for them to defeat you, they would have to not only be able to come in and refute or rebut your claim, they're going to have to prove that you don't own it and you can't control it. And, in fact, they created it, and it's their property. You know why they're not going to do that? Because all it's going to take is one major case for that to happen, and it actually tells the world what they're doing to them.
And you know what? That right there is exactly what our listeners needed to hear. You explained that so well. And I appreciate you taking me back to kindergarten, because that's where I come from. I always say I'm in a perpetual state of kindergarten, trying to get to second grade even, because when we can have the ability to drop our ego and help those who are requesting information but they can't understand it or hear it or process it, and we take it to simple terms, everyone should be able to understand, not understand, should be able to acknowledge this information how it was just given and comprehend it.
Right.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, and that's why I'm thanking you for doing that and recognizing it, because so many of us speak on this level so many times during our day or during our week with each other. And again, you want to learn something, you hang out with the people that know it or are learning the same thing. If you're not hanging out or talking,
doing it as well,
and are actually doing it.
Stop listening to, please, people, do me a favor. If I come to you and I'm telling you to do something that I haven't actually done myself and I can show you I'm doing it, why would you go out and do something that I'm selling you or giving you and I haven't done it myself?
Exactly.
See what I mean? So stop listening to people who are not actually doing these things. There's a lot of people got some powerful information and they appear to know a lot. But what you will find with 99% of those people, none of them are doing none of the things that they are selling and telling you to do, and that's when you need to run the opposite direction. When I tell people this is what people should be doing in court and doing this and that, you know you can go to YouTube and pull up a video of me in court doing that. You know you can actually hear this.
Yeah, and that's what I love about what you do, because you will help us understand that anything is possible if we just do it properly. And what you just stated is something I've had this conversation many times over. For those who are going out and helping people, say they're helping people claim their treasury account or this or that, my first question is, have you succeeded yet in doing that? And if I hear no, I say, then why are you continually going out telling other people to do it? Why do you not stop at the foundation and complete what you have started so that you have proof positive that it works, rather than going to the next person and getting them to start the same chain with no proof of work? We have to at least have a foundation where someone has done what they then perceive to teach you to do. Like you just said, that's very, very important. If I'm going to teach you how to bake a cake and I've never baked a cake, there might be an issue with baking that cake that I don't know about because I've never done it.
Great point. That was a good point. You don't go and learn how to play football from somebody that never jumped on the field. You don't go and learn how to drive a car, so to speak, by an individual that doesn't know how to drive themselves. Why? Because the only thing they can teach you how to do is basically F up. You see what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So we have another caller. We have another caller, Drew, I'm going to bring in. Let's see.
Okay,
they don't have their hand up. But we have a 732 area code ending in 1729. Did you have a question for Drew, a comment, or are you just listening in?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello,
yes, you're on air. Did you have a question or a comment or something you'd like to share with Drew Freeman?
Well, I just wanted to say Carol told me that Drew was on the call. Drew, this is Don Mark from East Coast, now transplanted West Coast. When I heard you was on the air, I just had to get on the call.
I'll be on Brother Sharif call after this. I don't have the number or anything, but he's on Blog Talk, too. I'm supposed to be going on his show at 1. And I was going to do a show tonight on my show. I don't know. That's 3 today. I've only had, like, about 4 hours of sleep in the last 48 hours, but I'm up and running.
Well,
but go ahead, bro.
True, you have to take care of yourself because there's a lot of people out there like this gentleman on the phone right now. Thank you so much for participating with us today because – Carol introduced me to True to begin with, and I've grown very fond of this gentleman's work because you know what? A lot of people can talk about it, but it's those who are doing it that you respect. And True, you're doing it, and you're out there perpetuating growth in our nation due to what you are doing. So anyone listening who has the opportunity to be near a computer to pull up your YouTube videos, you have grown in the last 6 months. I don't know about everybody else, but what I have seen is you have grown to a place where now you are explaining things in a way that you own it. You are not looking for validation from other people. You're not looking for someone to say, good job, oh, you did that right. You have now come to a place where you're just giving knowledge of what you have without worrying what the reaction you're going to get, because you're doing it, you know it works, and that's why I myself thank you and virtually shake your hand, sir, because you have grown so much as a teacher and educator in this pioneer movement that those of us out there who have a computer who can get to YouTube, please get there. Please listen to these videos and realize that you're hearing firsthand someone standing in front of a judge, someone sitting in front of a magistrate, someone who is saying, this is not right.
Taking papers into the Department of Justice Corruption Task Force, making changes of, I don't know how many arrests have happened, and it's pretty hot around Indiana, isn't it, True?
It's on fire down here. You know what, if I make it through this mess, I'm going to be part of shutting Indiana down. I guarantee you that, and that's what they're afraid of. You know, if I could get the people to wake up, it's a wrap for them, because the proof is in the pudding. And in my case is, in Carol's daughter's case, oh, man, I don't think people understand those issues right there between her and I. We can shut down this whole
Right.
Yes.
My son yesterday, you know, the same lawyers came after my son, and he's over in Germany, so I helped him write a brief. He sent it over apostilled. The lawyers backed out of the case yesterday. They put in a motion saying they were not pursuing him. They did not want to pursue him or her, and that they were in negotiations with him now. So I wanted to tell you that real quick.
That's huge. You'd
be happy.
Wow, I'm glad to hear that. It's like, you know, this stuff is not hard, people. What makes it hard is the fact that we don't surround ourselves with the proper people. And, I can go a little bit more into that. But the caller that just called in, did he have any additional information? I didn't want to cut, don't want to cut him out. But, did you have something to ask me or something like that, brother?
I apologize, I talked too much. Nah, you good, man, you good. I just wanted to let you know that thanks to you, thanks to Carol, thanks to David, and some other people that have given information, I went and found out this here child support system I was talking to you about before, and I hit the rock bottom motherlode on this thing. Just to let you know that I took some of your information, took some of David's information, took some of Carol's talent, and some other people who had shared stuff about all of this bankruptcy and stuff going on, and I actually found out how they're playing both ends against the middle and getting paid like 10 times over and nobody knows. And I said, wow, you know, the way that they're the mind screwed people, you were right, Carol was right, David was right, all of us are right. But like you said, it's just a matter of getting the people to wake up and see it. And I got to say, man, you are an inspiration, because when I think of you, I think of the Wolverine from the X-Men. You know, take for so much, and all of a sudden, here come the claws. All right, you want to keep going? All right, now I'm going to start slicing. So just keep doing what you're doing, man. I done put on the Juggernaut armor, and, yo, I'm just crashing through walls right now because they can't stop me.
And amen. Amen to that. And this is how all of us listening and talking and speaking about this right now win is by sharing it. And when you hear, if you share with 10 people and only one person even goes forward with it, that one person is going to share with 10 people. Now, when those people cross paths again and they say, oh, I heard this, and they go, oh, my gosh, I did too. Oh, my gosh, it must have merit. All of a sudden, it goes from one person hearing you out of that 10 to 3 to 4 to 5, and we're multiplying across this nation. Why? Because we're
right.
talking
see,
about
right. I want to thank you ladies as well, and a lot of the guests on my show, your show, and other shows that truly support me, because, you know, the backlash I get, it's a lot of you all that basically keep me going. Carol is a major part of it. You know why? Because I said, well, what people would consider an older lady, okay, I'm going to say, this woman, excuse what I'm about to say, but this woman got bigger than any man I've ever met.
Amen to that.
And for me to sit up and see this woman with her health situation and so on and so forth actually get out in the field and put up her dukes, like, do you really want to box with me? And she getting out here fighting people like Mike Tyson and looking at him like, I know I could beat you. And when I see these so-called men in the streets and younger women that are, for the most part, claim they're on this movement, but they freeze up and they get scared and they don't hold their ground, when I see Carol doing it, it's like I laugh at the younger people because I'm like, she's showing y'all up. It's like this lady has so much heart and courage. She's a inspiration to me, whether she know it or not, and being domiciled in the same geographical location. And when
it's
they
a
found
win-win.
Right, when they found out that Carol and I were associated with each other, they really didn't like that. They didn't like that because...
But we're moving the mountain with just a little mustard seed, and true, thank you. You're the one that brought it all out. I wasn't going to bring it out, and you're like, no, you got to. Because you're in danger.
Kill your ass. The shit you told me, Carol. Oh, man.
He said he got cold chills, and I was thinking, I got cold chills, too.
Oh, yeah. I said, what? He said, yeah, I got proof. Lady, you need to bring this shit out immediately. If you don't think they listen to our call right now, and then you was talking about how they were stalking you and so on and so forth, I said, look, you got to come out with this information. Whether you come on my show or not, you got to bring this information out publicly at a fast pace before they try to bury you. Because, Carol, I don't think everything that a lot of us have been doing and what Carol has discovered is not tied solely to Indiana. Indiana is a major player in this game. But it expands within all the 50 states, which she exposed, and a lot of people don't understand that. And what she exposed, she has 1,000% proof of the fraud and corruption in regards to mortgages. The biggest part of it is she blows wide open irrefutable facts of the identity theft that's being perpetrated upon the people by public officials. There is nothing they can do to get around it. Why do you think the United States District Attorney for the Southern District removed himself to practice law privately, and now he's running for mayor? He does not want to be responsible for having to indict and arrest his colleagues. So he's leaving it up to somebody else.
Exactly. And it is, and the key word here is systemic. The issues that we're finding and that have been found through mortgages and the identity theft and tied to the Ancestry.com and tied to graves and tied to the VA and tied to different levels of the administration. It's systemic. And the prisons, exactly. It's systemic. It's not, and none of this is really hard because criminals have got to do things in a way they remember how they've done them. And so it's a pattern. And once you see that pattern and once you figure out that pattern and tie it to everything else, it's simple, folks. This is fraud.
It's all anchored in mythology. If you'll go back to the old mythology, just start there and you'll see the pattern within that. They named two girls, Sirius and Brazella. And I might be pronouncing wrong, but Sirius was the name of the city as well, which is Crisis. And it means is it's no name. That's the meaning of it, no name.
Right. And everything that we have believed is actually a mystery, is actually a fiction. That which is true And that's what I love about your name, True Freeman. That which is true.
That's why I named my that True Freeman, yep. Straight exposing them.
Yep.
And that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I'm here to help the people. You know what I mean? That's just what it is, because my rights are not going to be protected and secured if my neighbor's rights aren't protected and secured. If my fellow man, and when I say man, it means man and woman. Look up the word, because man is interchangeable with women. So I'm not leaving women out. When I say man, I'm including women, because that's what the definition will tell you if you look it up. So
right.
I want for myself, I want for my fellow man and woman. That's just what it is. And if I'm the only one with rights, or I'm the only one with a nice car and a nice house, which I don't have, but I got a roof over my head and I got transportation, so I'm perfectly fine. If I'm the only one has so-called things that everyone doesn't have around me, it's only going to be a matter of time for those people try to band together to come after me to get some of what I have. So the best way to stop that is for me to share what I have with my fellow man, so that we can live side by side in a life.
And, you know, that is huge. That's huge what you just said, because we are brethren and sisters in this world. And the thing is, if we do not take care of each other and help bring each other up, the only time someone is going to bring you down is when it's about them. People who are jealous, and here comes back to that ego again, Carol, that we talk about. When the ego takes over, greed ensues. And when we do not have our brethren and sisters standing hand in hand saying, you're hungry, I have extra beans, here's my beans for you, we also have to remember that we have got to be healthy in our own foundation. So if our own foundation is not healthy, we can't help someone else become healthy. So we need to make sure that our country, that we perpetuate health and care in our country, and stop the greed and the egos. We're down to 3 minutes, True.
Well,
I'd like
they're
you
holding
to take
us up real quickly. They're holding us up. They're holding us up in their system with issues or warrants or mortgages. They're holding us up with that on the cross. And what True is saying is love. It is love. He is saying, if I have rights, I'm going to share them with the other people. He's trying to correct the fact that nobody has rights, and he's making a way. So you're right. He is a pioneer.
Yes, thank you.
And I want to let this be known. Brother Sharif just texted me, so we're not going on today at 1. He's postponed it till Friday. I'll get that information out to people on my Facebook. And what I may do is once this call ends, is take a brief break, and I may start up a call on TalkShoe for questions, you know, anything, you know, for us to basically just build, you know. So,
gotcha.
You know, that's fine for anybody that wants to. The caller ID on TalkShoe is 125445. If you type that in, you'll get the call. It'll give you the number and so on and so forth on TalkShoe.
125445?
Yes. If you go to TalkShoe and type, it'll take you straight to my page. And I'll probably set that up for 1:30. And basically, I don't know much, but I like to open the calls for discussion and people's comments, because a lot of people call in and ask questions that other people don't, and I may be able to respond with an answer that may answer 15, 20 people on the call's questions. And I open up my calls for people to call in and ask me questions. I don't like to open up my calls and act like I know everything, because I don't. I don't like to open up my calls and just talk, but people just... I mean, people be coming in, but a lot of people, they say they have all these questions and concerns, but then when a form is provided for them to call in and ask those questions and address those concerns, a lot of times they don't. So, you know,
interrupt you here, because we do have someone, a new caller in queue with their hand up. Area code 714, ending in 6168. You're on the air. Do you have a question or a comment for True Freeman?
I actually got a comment for Mr. Freeman. This is Colonel Hunt.
How are you doing? Thank you for the call.
Hi, pretty good. I've been listening to your radio and radio program, and I tell you, it's people like you that are on the cutting edge that's going to help turn this country around. you know, information is important. It is probably just as important as bullets. Anyways, I just wanted to say that. And the other thing that I thought was real important, Tim Donnelly just snubbed Jerry Brown to meet with Jerry Brown at a dinner with the Mexican president, and has chosen to get involved in a protest. I'm not sure where that protest is taking place, but it's connected to the Marine that is being held in Mexico.
Wow, that's awesome. And you know, that's huge, Colonel Hunt, because, again, it's communication, it's knowledge, and it's understanding that every bit of what's going on in our country, whether it be riots or foreclosures, bank seizures, anything, it all ties back into identity.
It all ties together.
It all ties
together. Corruption, all this corruption, the illegal banking derivatives, all of that, the people losing
the
their homes, it is all connected, because that's how they're funding their global government, and they're funding it on the sweat of the backs of homeowners.
Exactly.
Yes,
and the people as a whole. And see, this is the thing, too, in regards to, like, what's going on down in St. Louis right now. I'm going to tell y'all right now, that's a whole bait-and-switch thing.
It is. I've also got confirmed information that ISIS is in Ferguson.
Now, say that again.
I've got confirmed information that ISIS helped precipitate the riots in Ferguson.
Oh, yeah. There's
wow.
a lot of information. And proof on YouTube that this is basically they're planting people in. Those people that are looting and throwing Molotov cocktails and things, those aren't locals. Those people were brought in from outside places to basically cause a bunch of disturbances. And I got some video. I'm compiling a bunch of videos and information in regards to that, and I'm going to have a very long presentation in the video put on YouTube here shortly. What I want to do first, get to some other things, but it's a lot of things out there that prove what's going on. What they're doing is they're basically, this the only way that they're going to enact martial law and really take over is basically to start a race war. And what I'm trying to convince the what they call black community is stop blaming white people for the problems that we all are. See, we need
You're
to
the one that I saw the other day on YouTube telling black people stop blaming white people for the problems.
Right.
We have to quit blaming.
I recognize your voice because I saw your face because a friend of mine who's my supply and logistics officer that is in Florida turn me on to you. And he goes, listen to this guy. And I did not put two and two together.
Yeah, that's me. And a lot of people with
my
community don't like me but because they like, oh, you helping the white people. I ain't helping the white people. Shit, the white people need our help. We need their help. Now, I do agree that some of the people that are in office perpetuating this shit is white, but they also black, they also Hispanic, very few of them, but they in there. The fact of the matter is, it's not about race, people. Look, you losing your home and you a white man, just like I'm a black man losing my home, and I'm not losing my home right now. They're trying to take it, but we're just using this, you know, I'm using this as an example. If both
exactly.
of us beat up by the same damn bully, and neither one of us can beat the bully by ourselves, even though we don't like each other because of a female or something, why can't we say, well, damn, if we don't band together, man, and go against him because he too powerful against us individuals, how about, okay, we both having a problem with him, and he trying to steal our home. So can we at least put down our swords and guns, man, against each other, man, and can we agree and unite that it may be in our both of our best interests to band together for the sake of preserving our property and our interests in that property by banding together and see what we can we bump heads, put our both of our heads together to stop this asshole from basically doing both of us harm, and people still trying to say blame the white people. It's like, and like I said, they don't like me for what I say, but I speak truth. White people ain't
amen.
Amen.
I hear you, though. I hear you there.
Well, we're down to 30 seconds here, True, and I got to tell you, what you just said encompassed the whole show. We have got to come together as blind people, not seeing color, not seeing religion, but seeing the goal as to taking our country back. We the people are the government. We the people, regardless of statue, regardless of race, creed, color, we have got to stand together. And True Freeman, you are an inspiration. You are the pioneer that I love to have had on the show today. Carol, thank you for your time. Colonel Hunt, Frisbee, gentlemen out in California, gentlemen out in the 732, may you all have a wonderful day. God bless you all, and see you on the flip side.
All right. Call me anytime, Renee, if you need me back.
You got it, bud. Have a good one.
Tell me.